actually, it requires a lot more effort than you think it does. And you end up with less cash at the end of the day than your 6 cap would suggest. And so we kind of use that to illustrate the fact that an office investor buying a building in a 6 cap never is actually getting a 6 cap.
Welcome back to the Word Bullet Podcast, where we chat with the leaders in commercial real estate to answer all questions space as a service. This podcast is for anyone involved in commercial real estate in any way. If you're an investor, a fund manager, developer, property manager, agent, or broker, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'm your host, Caleb Parker, and today I'm rolling out the red carpet for a titan in our industry, a man whose vision and expertise is reshaping our understanding of real estate investment and development. Get ready to be inspired by the one and only my friend, Michael Kovacs. Michael is founding partner of Castleforge, a leading UK-based private real estate investor that combines research-led investment themes with vertical integration and in-house operating platforms to invest in real estate located in and around select UK and European cities. Before launching Castleforge in 2010, Michael was the brains behind transactions worth over £2 billion across the UK, Europe, and Asia for Westbrook Partners in London. Before that, he spent time at Blackstone Group in New York. With a Bachelor of Science in Economics from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, graduating summa cum laude, Michael's journey is nothing short of remarkable. In today's episode, we're peeling back the layers of traditional real estate investment, diving deep into the world of flex space, and uncovering the secrets behind Castleforge's success. From starting their own operator Clockwise to transforming the Glasgow skyline, Michael's story is a masterclass in innovation and resilience. So buckle up as we explore the challenges, triumphs, and the future of real estate investment. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Now, before we head into the studio with Michael, I want to give a big shout out to our headline sponsor this season, Freshwave. Freshwave is the connectivity infrastructure as a service provider, making sure mobile phone signal works in office buildings. Freshwave is connected to some of the biggest, most challenging wireless environments in the UK, and they can be found in over 2,000 buildings nationwide. And let me tell you, from personal experience, Freshwave improves customer satisfaction in office buildings. Now, Jeff, let's kick it. Welcome to the Word Bullet Podcast, Mike.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. Great to be here.
Welcome back to the exchange. And we've had quite a few meetings, and every time I have a conversation with you, I learn something. So I'm excited for you to share your insights here on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Hopefully I can do that.
In the bio, we talk about you guys at Castleforge being a traditional real estate investor and developer, but you have heavily leaned into flex. I mean, you don't just invest in flex, but I mean, you've so far leaned into it. You've got your own operator, Clockwise. I'd love to hear why and how that got started.
Sure. So we were interested in the space, you know, 5-10 years ago. And when we looked at the different ways to potentially invest in the space, you can either lease to an established operator, you can bring on an operator, like a hotel operating agreement would, or you can start your own. Now, I think degree of difficulty, right, in that. The easiest thing to do is just to lease to an operator. We didn't like the upside downside dynamics of that. I think that really played out during COVID actually, where, you know, I think a lot of owners who thought that they were due a check every quarter suddenly realized that that check only comes insofar as the operator's making money in the space. So, you know, and I don't think that, you know, should have surprised anybody given the history of the flex market for the last 20 years. But nevertheless, that's why we didn't go in that direction. There were really no established operators doing management contracts. And so we decided not to go down that route. I think that'll come as the...
This was what year?
This is probably 2016.
2016.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, we think that'll come, but that requires a much more mature industry than flex is today. And then, so we were kind of left with the last option, which is let's capture the upside and the downside and create our own operator. Knowing, of course, that you need some economies of scale. It is a high degree of difficulty, but we had a larger office portfolio. So we said, why don't we establish it and start it off in our recently purchased Glasgow location?
Why Glasgow? Why that location?
Well, that location was a, you know, classic, probably A- location within the city or B+ location. It wasn't really prime, but it was a great location for small tenants because it had a lot of access to really good retail around there. So you weren't going to get your big, large credit occupiers because they want to go into shiny new buildings in the kind of traditional core. And also the floor plate sizes were too small for the big tenants, but it splits really well as flex. And we think that there's a real strong demand, right? And we spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. So we first tested the waters by refurbishing about a third of the 60,000 square foot office building, 20,000 feet. It worked well, let up very quickly at desk rates way ahead of what we had projected. So we said, okay, we'll try another third. That continued to do well. So we didn't really see any topping out of demand. And so we said, all right, we'll do the whole thing. So now the entire 60, 65,000 square foot office building with amazing views over Glasgow and really providing, I think, the types of amenities that small tenants really just can't access in Glasgow is full. And it's been, you know, bar COVID has been full since 2017, 18, when we finished it off, 90% plus occupancy, desk rates way ahead of what we would have expected. And importantly, in the office market, it throws off cash every year. And that, I think, is something that a lot of office investors right now are looking for and figuring out, how can I do that? How can I actually produce a consistent cash flow stream to my office asset?
Into the cash flow stream and the challenges around that in a moment.
Yep.
You guys have an amazing white paper that you released last year around valuations. I want to go back to this Glasgow asset. You know, you got to where you were 90-something percent. It's now a fully flex building. What was that the catalyst for you to say, okay, let's roll this out across our portfolio? Did you go out and buy assets specifically for this? Can we talk about your underwriting? What drove those decisions?
Sure. Combination of both. So we had existing buildings already that we had purchased that were going to be 100% traditionally leased. But when Clockwise in Glasgow, Clockwise is the brand that we decided to go with. When Clockwise in Glasgow was working so well, we decided, okay, well, are there similar buildings in similar types of locations in similar cities around the UK where we can put maybe not 100%, but part of the building, we turn it into Clockwise? And we did. And then that worked so well that actually then we went and started to purchase assets where the Clockwise underwriting was there from day one. And in some cases, the building would be 100% Clockwise from day one if it was vacant. In some cases, we bought a half vacant building and then brought Clockwise in, right? So we kind of were our own tenant for the other 50%. And then in some cases, you know, we purchased it at a high occupancy level, maybe 80%. But then over time, we knew we would remove tenants and then filter Clockwise into the building. So there were a lot of permutations that we used, but ultimately it was the success of Savoy, which is our building up in Glasgow, that I think gave us the confidence to go forward into putting Clockwise into other buildings.
Okay, that's fantastic. And I've been flying around the world the last 3.5 years, helping landlords look at how to bring flex in. And one of the challenges is that their asset business plan was put together a couple of years ago. Yep. And then we bring a flex business plan in, and it's like trying to wedge one business plan into one, and flex was an afterthought, and it just didn't work.
Yep.
Sometimes it works great.
Yep.
But blending it together and starting from scratch and having one business model for an asset that includes flex, that's key. But
I was just going to say, I think the reason that sometimes it doesn't work is also there are some floor plates that just don't make sense for flex, right? That you can't get the densities that you want. There are locations that don't work for flex. So when you look at sort of a traditional building, and this is one of the problems that we deal with all the time, landlords who have a traditional building that's a great location, great building, big floor plates, could definitely be occupied by a single tenant, 20,000 square feet, 10-year lease, whatever it is, they're like, wait a second, why would I almost, quote, make it worse and divide, right? So I think that the kind of building as well, and when you're wedging it in, is one of the reasons why it doesn't work. The other reasons, and we can go into it later, are probably valuation, which we'll get into. But even the bones of the building need to make sense for flex and need to be more, I mean, the office buildings need to be more like hotel-like, right? They need to be able to be divisible. They need to have double-loaded corridor down the middle, super efficient, where you can get the densities that you want, because that's going to actually drive the highest per square foot, which sometimes is very different than the types of office buildings that you've been told over the last 20 years that you as an office owner want.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly what I was seeing in my conversations the last several years. But when it does work, it works brilliantly. But then the business plan can work and it still doesn't work because of the business plan of the asset. And what I mean by that is if they're developing an asset and looking to trade it in 5 years and they want to get to a certain Y on your traditional lease and you bring in a percentage of flex and you discount on the cap rate and the yields on that NOI for the flex footprint, yep, then you look at the delta there and you're just like, okay, I'm not going to get the acquisition on price I want. Yep. You guys dropped that white paper and I thought was a great eye opener, very thought provoking. What was it called?
Oh, only the paranoid survive. Only the paranoid office investors survive, which is a riff on Andy Grove's Only the Paranoid Survive, which was really about a transformational or structural change in an industry. In his case, microchips, in our case, offices.
And if it's okay with you, we'll put a link in the show notes
for please.
People to go download that.
Yeah, sure, sure. Okay. It's all on our website.
Okay, we'll do that. But in there, you talk about how a 6% cap rate is not necessarily really a 6% cap rate. And then you talk about why the spread between traditional and flex revenues may not need to be there at all. So can you elaborate on that?
Sure. So, you know, we have a section of the paper that we term the lazy kids problem, right? And the lazy kids problem is you're a very successful entrepreneurial individual. You create a business. It produces widgets. It makes a certain amount per year. Let's call it 10 million of EBITDA. It trades at a 5x multiple. And, you know, your business is worth 50 million. Your question is, I have three lazy kids, right? And I need to provide for them. None of them want to take over the business. And also, I think they're going to drive it into the ground. And a widget manufacturing business can quickly turn from 10 million of EBITDA to nothing. So what do? You sell the business and you buy some real estate so that your lazy kids can kind of just sit there, right? And they can fund their lifestyle. Okay, great. The problem is, if you think that you're buying a building at a 6 cap with that 50 million and you're going to give each of those three kids $1 million a year for the rest of their lives, then you're kidding yourself or you've never bought an office building before, right? Because you never actually get 6%, right? You get something less than 6%. And then furthermore, every couple of years, 5 years, 10 years, 15, I don't, whatever it is, you also have to chuck in some serious capital to release the building and to keep it going. And so it's just a very lumpy cash flow stream where your ins and outs are not always consistent. And actually, it requires a lot more effort than you think it does. And you end up with less cash at the end of the day than your 6 cap would suggest, right? And so we kind of use that to illustrate the fact that an office investor buying a building in a 6 cap never is actually getting a 6 cap.
That's a big value bomb.
And so is there a way to, you know, to transform that into a 6 cap? Or also, you know, one of the things we were talking about in the paper is that's actually become worse over time as tenants move more frequently and as leases become shorter, right? And so this problem of this lazy kids problem that you've got of kind of hitting $3 million a year for your three kids is actually becoming worse every year, right? So what is an office investor to do?
And when you talk about that, I love it. I love the example of the lazy kids. And if you think about, you know, you can apply that to institutional investors and pensions and having to pay out premiums and all that stuff. It's cash flow yep. for various reasons. It doesn't have to be lazy kids.
Right. It could be very hardworking kids.
Yeah, exactly. I love the analogy. You talk about the 6 cap actually really is maybe down to 3%.
3-4%. Yeah, that's right. And probably getting worse. And the reason that is, you know, we went back 20 years and looked at how long tenants are staying in office buildings. And that doesn't mean the length of leases, because how long you stay in an office building is not necessarily determined by the length of the lease. You can either break early, you can renew, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found is that the typical office investor or office tenant's length of stay back in 20 years ago, 2002, 2003, was almost 15 years. 14 or 15 years. So that means that a tenant would take a 10-year lease and then they might renew that for 5 years. Today, and these are figures kind of pre-COVID, that got down to about 6 or 7 years. And post-COVID, my guess is that's probably lower than 6 years. So not only does that tenant with a 10-year lease and a break at 5 now exercise that break, right? More than 50% of the time, they don't even get to that 10 years. And so the problem is you basically are just getting a shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter lifetime value of your customer. If you have a multi-tenanted building, it just means that you, and if you have a single-tenanted building, it doesn't matter as well. You basically instead of every 14 or 15 years, every 6 years, you're going to have to re-tenant that space. And there's going to be downtime. There's going to be capital payments out. There's going to be leasing commissions. There's going to be everything that you need to do to spend or not receive income, as the case may be, to get that next tenant in. And that is worse than it was 20 years ago. So I think when people are using kind of 20 year ago metrics for how should I think about offices, first off, they're completely wrong today. And then the second thing is in 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, if you assume that the pace of business change happens even faster, which there's no reason not to assume, then it's going to be even more wrong, right? And so investors have to think like, wait, how can I either stabilize that you know, economic cap rate or actually get it back up to 6%? How can I get as close to the stated cap rate with my economic cap rate as I can?
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me? Sorry, you're breaking up.
80% of mobile phone calls are made from inside buildings. And while energy-efficient building materials like low-E glass are good for the environment, they block mobile signal entering from outdoors. Poor indoor mobile signal can mean lower productivity for businesses, make buildings less appealing to prospective tenants, and ultimately impact the valuation of the building itself. Freshwave solves this problem. We deploy in-building mobile systems that connect directly to the mobile network you need, whether that's just one operator or four. This guarantees the quality of service. Visit freshwavegroup.com to find out more.
I'm going to cut to the chase and say, you think flex is the answer?
I think flex is an answer. There are different types of answers. I think when you think about that framework, then it forces you into the mindset of asking yourself, what type of cash flow stream can I be buying that I have very little non-accounted for CapEx, leasing downtime, churn, et cetera, over a 15 to 20 year hold period as I can. Okay. And then in our opinion, it basically splits into two. You're either talking about 20 year leases, okay, where the assumption is at the end, the tenant's going to leave and you have to re-tenant it, or buildings that are so multi-tenanted that they almost function like hotels or multifamily assets, that it doesn't matter that hotels are nightly leases. It doesn't matter that multifamily assets are yearly leases. It doesn't matter that student accommodation assets are yearly leases. What matters is that you have so many of them and it's so diversified that you kind of get to a stabilized occupancy level that also takes into account all the costs of running that building. Not only just the cost at the building center, but also the corporate overhead costs that come with having an operator actually operate your building as well. And the hotel market has figured that out for a long time, right? So it's one or the other. And I think that those are the two types of buildings that we're investing in. You know, we just bought Deutsche Bank's headquarters in London. That's 300,000 square feet. We're going to hopefully take it to 500,000 square feet. That's the kind of building that a major blue chip company takes for 20 years, at which point you can be pretty sure that your economic cap rate and your stated cap rate are the same, right? Or on the flex side, you're buying a stated cap rate that already takes into account all of the LCs, the CapEx, the re-tenanting costs, the vacancy, the churn, all that's already taken into account like a hotel. So your stated cap rate, all you really, the spread between the two, it's almost like the life cycle replacement of your M&E, and that's 25 years as well. And you can account for that too. So those are the two types of assets that we think will get that 3-4% of traditional offices back up to say 6% or as close to 6% as you can get.
So I just want to clarify then, because you talk about these two examples and, you know, you've got this whole conversation about flight to quality. It sounds like that's what you're describing with the 20-year lease.
Yep.
But then you've got the flex, and I would say that's also a flight to quality as well.
Yep.
But are those two different assets, or are those in the same asset?
Those are probably different assets. I suppose they can be in the same asset, but in reality, they don't have to be. And in our mind, they're probably in different assets. I guess just because at least at this moment in time, the institutional investor who just wants to put a building away for 20 years isn't going to be the one who wants to necessarily take the volatility of income stream that goes with, right? I mean, the person who buys a Premier Inn on a 25-year lease is not the investor, certainly not in the same asset, and probably not even the same investor in the same portfolio that's also going to buy an operating Hilton, right? So I think that from an asset perspective, you know, you probably have to bifurcate your investors. Now, what I would say though, is that there's probably a percentage of the 20-year lease type asset that maybe that investor might say it's better to have flex in 10%, 5%, 15% of the building, just so that I can also breathe some life into the building. Because, you know, with those flex buildings, you do get a lot more amenity kind of, not amenity, that's probably the wrong word. In those types of buildings, you probably just get a lot more activity, right? You get a lot more coming and going, and it breathes life into the building in a way that kind of a stable 20-year single-tenanted building, sometimes it can be a little bit dry and dull for tenants and occupiers. And so I think as people think about what they want out of an office environment, having flex in that building could improve the day-to-day in that building. But I don't think that it's necessary.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying that. If we talk about those two assets, two asset sort of classes almost, if we park the 20-year flight to quality asset,
sure.
We talk about flex, but I want you to also clarify something, because I understood some of the Castle Forge assets that Clockwise are in, it is a mix of traditional lease and flex. And the flex isn't just 10 to 15%, it's quite higher than that.
Yep.
What drives that? Is it underwritten in the very beginning to have both revenue models? Yep.
Yes, I think it is. And so I think that once you depart from the 20-year asset or 20-year lease, and by the way, I should also qualify that by saying there's not that many buildings, okay, that can attract 15 to 20-year plus leases, right? Because sure, you know, 20 years ago, a 50,000 square foot tenant might take a lease for 15 or 20 years. They don't today. So, you know, if you have a 50,000 square foot building, like good luck trying to lease that whole thing to a single tenant, right? So your only other option is multi-tenanted, right? And, you know, if that's the direction you're going in, then at least have flex large enough so that you can diversify your income stream enough, right? So we just like more and more diversification in the assets. And that's why it's okay. You know, we can lease for 3 years, 5 years to tenants. We can lease for 3 months to tenants in the flex space, but we're thinking about the entire building as just one diversified income stream.
And even when you do lease on the more flexible terms, the average lifetime value of that customer.
Oh, they stay 3 to 4 years.
Right. So yeah. It ends up being 3 to 4 anyways.
Yeah, no, that's right. Exactly. Which was, you know, we're always like, I don't know why we would provide a discount for a tenant to take a 3-year lease when in reality, even though they're on month to month contracts, they stay for 3.5 years. Right. So you might as well actually be getting paid for that. But you will probably tap out a micro market for how much flex demand there is. Right. And so you may have to go into, okay, we'll do a half a floor to somebody. We'll do, you know, one floor to somebody. But so we are just thinking of ourselves now in those types of buildings as just purveyors of space. You either have, you know, space on daily, monthly, annually, 5 years, whatever the case may be. And at the end of the day, you end up with a building that's in demand. There's sufficient demand in the local micro location. And you just have a very diversified income stream.
But your business plan is to exit those buildings at some point.
Yes, that's right.
So, and this is where I think I'm leading to here, is when you have a building that's a substantial amount of flex, but you also have traditional leasing, and you look at the cap rate and the exit yields, when that investor that's buying that asset comes in, are you blending and putting a blended cap rate on the NOI? Are you separating out the flex from the traditional? How is that working?
Yeah, I mean, in today's market, I think that valuers and investors coming in want to see a breakout between the two. So they kind of value traditional as one, flex as another. You know, the other value of, quite frankly, having flex in the building with traditional occupiers is we're seeing that we're getting 10 to 30% premiums on traditional ERVs, right? So like, even if you kind of discount the fact that the building has flex in it versus, say, a traditional building, I'd rather a valuer tell me that that traditional building is worth 7% instead of 6% if I'm getting 30% premiums on rents because it has all the amenities that our flexible buildings have. So at the end of the day, it's kind of the per square foot that we're looking at the end. Sure, it may be higher on a cap rate, but you're also getting considerably higher rents. So, but yes, you're right. Like today, I think the valuation community looks at traditional and says, okay, it's this cap rate. It looks at flex and it says, okay, it's that cap rate.
Which is at a discount.
It is at a discount to traditional. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But of course, you're getting an even higher triple net rent. I mean, I'll give you an example in Brussels. So we have a building that is a 1960s, 70s office building, good location, but you know, by no account would anybody say that like, we can get into ESG and the best of the best at one point in time, you know, later on in this conversation. But I don't think anybody would say that this is the building that would be on the brochure of what every insurance company would call the best of the best, except for the fact that the tenants actually think it's the best of the best, right? I mean, we have global Fortune 500 companies in the building. They love it. The tenants love it. So like, clearly they think it's the best of the best, even if, you know, the valuation community says, well, you know, your EPC rating could be higher or your BREEAM rating could be higher. That's by the by. We'll get into that. But, you know, the punchline on all that is on the flex side, you are getting between 1.7 and 2 times the triple net that you are getting on traditional leases. Even after, that's not rent, that's NOI. So that's after you take into account all your operating costs, all your corporate overheads, et cetera. You know, traditional rents in that market may do 200, 250 euros a meter. we're getting close to 500 euros a meter. So even if you're applying a discount on the cap rate, your per square meter is obviously much higher on the flex portion of the building. And by the way, in Belgium, they do 369 leases, right? So tenant can leave every 3 years. Meanwhile, our tenants are staying for 3-4 years. So it's like, it's not really that different of from a security perspective. So we like the fact that, you know, even at the discounted cap rate, you can end up with a higher per square foot, per square meter.
That's interesting. And I think just nailing this point hard in the wall here, going back to what you said earlier, sure. If it's a 6 cap traditional and the footprint that traditional has in the building, and in the discount, it takes it to a, say, a 6.5 on the flex.
I wish.
7, 8. What,
keep going.
Okay. But
I mean, in today's market, keep going, right? It was 100 to 200 basis point discount in kind of before the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and Blackstone told you that offices is dead and, you know, interest rates went up and et cetera. Right now, I'm somewhat flippant. I mean, I do believe there is structural transformation happening in the office market, but right now that discount is, you know, could be 300, 400 basis points in some cases.
Okay. So massive spread.
Yeah.
But then we're not talking about the economic.
No, we're not. We're not talking about the economic. That is the stated cap rate. Exactly. Right. The difference is that the flex office cap rate is much more close to the economic cap rate. So like, say you take a 6 cap on a traditional office and you say, well, you know, flex office, man, you know, that's, those tenants are leaving all the time and there's no security of income. That shouldn't be a 6. That's an 8. Okay. Your 6 is actually like a 3 to a 4 on traditional, but your 8 is an 8 or it's nearly an 8. Maybe it's a 7. Or 7.5. Because the only thing, like I said, that you're not taking into account over time is like your every 25-year life cycle replacement of the M&E of the building. Okay. So you're probably doubling your economic cap rate, which as an investor, that's what you should care about. So it seems crazy that to us that flex should trade at such a massive discount to traditional and that stated cap rate for flex is much closer to your economic cap rate.
So you believe and you think, do you believe it? And second of all, do you think we'll get there that the cap rates on both revenue models should be the same?
I hope we get there in the end, but I'd love to be, you know, buying and creating flex meanwhile, before everybody kind of realizes this or figures this out. Look, I'll give you a perfect example. So in Bristol, there are two buildings. This is a tale of two buildings, okay? Both of which we either own or have owned, okay? In 2017, we refurbished a building that I would call an A-minus location in Bristol. It was over one cathedral square. So it was over by the cathedral, right in the middle of town, but not in the kind of hustle bustle of main area of Bristol, but still an acceptable office location that we leased half the building to the University of Bristol, half the building to Dyson. Prime rents at the time were like £32 a foot. So we leased it at that rate. And both of them took 10-year leases, 10-year fixed terms. One was 15 with a break at 10, but let's call it 10 for both of them. But to two tenants. So 23,000 square feet and 23,000 square feet. We sold that building sub 5% because that's what everybody wanted in Bristol at the time. Great building in Bristol, newly refurbished. At that time, you would have called it a best of the best, right? All the EPC and BREEAM ratings that you would have wanted. Credit tenants, 2 10-year terms, perfect, right? Okay. What happens 10 years later? We're 7 years later. By the way, that makes me feel so old. Is that like a building I refurbished, leased, on 10-year terms, sold it to somebody and said, I don't know, they'll do something with it over the course of 10 years. It's like, it's now coming back to me. There's 3 years left on those leases. And by all accounts, both tenants are leaving. Okay. So you had 10-year terms, but that doesn't mean that it's a great long-term cash flow stream because now the owner of the building is going to get that building back vacant in 10 years because there's two tenants. Okay. And somebody told me that there's another building that sold in Bristol recently, and that's the prime Bristol building, sub 6%, just sub 6. And there are two principal tenants in that building. And there's 10.5 years or something WALT on the lease. And that should be the prime building in Bristol that everything should be benchmarked off of. And I'm thinking to myself, if you just look at what happened to one cathedral, it's like, what good was that 10-year lease? And by the way, none of this stuff is new. Okay. We went back in 2017, you could have found data that will tell you that out of every lease expiry, something like 2/3 of those end up vacant. Okay. So you could have looked at those and said, done some very simple math. I have 4 probable outcomes. Either they both leave, they both stay, and then 2 times one of them stays, right? And said, okay, 2/3 times 2/3 is about 50% that they both leave. Okay. 1/3 times 1/3, about 10% that they both stay. And then like equally 2 times 1/3 times 2/3 is also 45. It's 45, 45, 10, only 10% that they stay. So like the person buying that knew that at 10 years time, you were either going to end up with a vacant building or one tenant gone and having to release the space in 90% of the cases. Meanwhile, that's 5 to 6%, right? 5% then, 6% today. Meanwhile, we've got a building on the other side of town, and that's a service office building, fully flex. It's 35,000 square feet. It is fantastic. It is always 90, 95% occupied. We finished it in the middle of COVID, it leased up so quickly. And that building is just producing cash, and it has 40 or 50 tenants in it. It's so diversified, so multi-tenanted that it just stays at that level. And all the costs are taken into account. That building will never be vacant because it will always have, some years it might be 80% occupied, some years 100, but it'll always be around that level. And you know where the valuers are telling us that is?
Where is it at?
300 basis points discount to the quote prime buildings. And which one would you want to buy? The one where you're going to have a problem in 10 years, or the one where in 10 years from now, you're just going to be clipping the same coupon that you were clipping in year 9, which is the same coupon that you're clipping in year 11, plus or minus 10 or 20%.
I mean, it makes sense to me. And it just doesn't jive with the way that buildings have always been valued. It's not a guaranteed income because that income could just disappear and it's not in a long-term lease. So therefore, where is it going to go? But I believe that if you have enough trading history, you look back last 3 years and after stabilization, there's no reason it shouldn't continue barring some act of God or something.
Yeah, sure. I mean, COVID doesn't happen every, you know, business cycle.
Right. But aside from that, that revenue line is going to continue just like in the hotel industry.
Yeah, that's right. And you'll have some years that are worse and some years that are better. But broadly speaking, you'll have 20, 25 years of a clear cash flow stream. And if you model out 20 years of cash flow on both a One Cathedral Square, taking into account those probabilities, and then in the generator building, which we have in Bristol, you will find that you probably double your cash flow over the course of those 20 years. And so there is no world where you would want to pay the same amount of money for what seems to be a safer income stream, but is actually way more concentrated, way less diversified, and by the way, way more likely to be vacant at some point in time, right? And again, we go back to the lazy kids problem. It's like, if you need money then to refurbish in the 90% of cases that you either have to refurb half the building or the whole building and then re-tenant it, where are your lazy kids going to come up with the cash that year in order to refurbish the building to get tenants back in? That is really, really powerful.
Look, this has been fantastic conversation. I've been doing this podcast for 10 seasons talking about evaluations, and this has been probably the most thought-provoking one, I believe. And I hope everyone listening is taking notes and it's going to challenge the valuers' methodologies because, I mean, my friend Benjamin Bach over in Waterloo, Canada, he always says, it doesn't matter about the valuers. All that matters is the buyers. The buyers are going to put their own valuation on it. But I think the valuers have a lot to do with it because of the lending situation.
It does. It's holding back investment because of the lending situation.
I just remind everybody, we've put the link to the white paper in the show notes. Mike, thank you so much for sharing your insights. Yeah,
thanks very much. Really, really lovely being here.
Looking forward to continuing our conversations.
And yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Let's do one soon, another one. In another couple of years, maybe if valuers change their mind or the market changes, I'd love to see kind of revisiting what ends up being, you know, topical for the market.
And maybe next time we'll get a valuer in the room with us to have this
conversation. Yeah. It's got to be a fair fight.
Good stuff. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, take care of yourself.
Mobile signal inside buildings is a must have. And connectivity infrastructure as a service provider, Freshwave, delivers it with flexible commercial terms that suit you. From landlord-funded mobile systems to pay-as-you-occupy, or a mixture of the two, we work with you to deliver the digital connectivity you and your building needs. So whether you're a real estate developer, landlord, or tenant, we'll make sure you're on. Visit freshwavegroup.com to find out more.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And remember, fortune favors the bold. Drumroll, please. P.S. If you want to find out about future-proofing your portfolio, head over to newflex.com.
Attention business owners, my name is Jason Allen Scott, and I've got a game-changing opportunity. At least I think it is, and so do my clients. Are you ready to build a wildly successful business from your podcast, or use your podcast to increase the success of your business? Why not try Podcasting for Business, the ultimate program to monetize your message and skyrocket your success? I'll work closely with you to refine your business model, revenue streams, and messaging, ensuring your podcast becomes a powerful tool for driving growth and generating income, just like we've done for so many clients before. As a seasoned podcasting coach, I've helped countless entrepreneurs transform their podcasts into thriving, profitable ventures. Our unique hybrid coaching model combines online learning with personalized one-to-one coaching calls. Together, we'll fine-tune your podcast's business potential, creating a clear roadmap to success that aligns with your goals and vision. Don't miss this opportunity to transform your podcast into a profitable business. Visit podcastingforbusiness.co today and take the first steps towards unlocking your podcasting potential. Let's build something special together.